This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. Our guest today is Ellis Marsalis. This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musician Spotlight. I'm very pleased to be speaking by phone today to Mr. Ellis Marsalis. It's great to speak with you, Ellis.
Thank you. Thank you for the call.
Yeah, and we are speaking to Ellis from his home in New Orleans, Louisiana. Ellis's music will, of course, be very familiar to a lot of our listeners, particularly those who are aficionados of jazz. His career as a pianist and composer goes back over 60 years. And he is as well, if I may say, the patriarch of one of the most significant families in American music history, I would say, with six sons. A lot of folks know the ones who are the musicians, Branford and Winton and Ellis III, Delfeo, and also Mboya Kenyatta and Jason. And as well, of course, Mr. Marsalis is very well known as a renowned music educator. And certainly, you know, Harry Connick Jr. comes to mind, Terrence Blanchard, some of the folks that listeners might know. But there's so many more lives that you've reached as an educator. So your reputation precedes you as you join us here on the program. Ellis, speaking of New Orleans, you've lived in New Orleans all your life, if I'm not mistaken.
And I was born here.
Yeah, yeah. And I wanted to ask if you could take the listeners kind of back to New Orleans in your early years growing up and just talk about the city then, just some of the sights, the sounds, some of the things that you remember most about New Orleans when you were growing up.
Well, the first thing was getting old enough to become aware of the state segregation law, which limited physical mobility with that slowly go away to a point where I was able to get musicians to play who was interested in the music. When I look at New Orleans today, occasionally I tell people, I think of New Orleans in two ways, before Katrina and after Katrina, because that hurricane changed a lot about New Orleans. So not a lot has changed intrinsically. People still go out and second line. There's a lot of street activity. A lot of tourists come because it's a very liberal city in terms of drinking alcohol. But for the most part, we're just going along day to day. There's a mayoral election going on right now. And it'll be the first time that New Orleans has ever had a female mayor.
Ellis, one of the things that struck me in listening to another interview of yours online, and I don't know that folks would know enough about the history of New Orleans to understand this, that when you were growing up, the kids got expelled from school for playing jazz. Am I correct?
Yeah. Mostly in universities, though.
Oh, in the universities. Okay. Well, still, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, that's a social statement. And I'm sure that there are people, if they're old enough anyway, can relate their particular institute or institution to the same problem. I mean, there was such a heavy emphasis on European art music until jazz was a no-no.
And how have you seen that change over the years?
Well, I think there's a pragmatic approach. For one thing, there are universities with music departments who need students just from their bottom line in terms of the budget that they get. So that means that jazz studies programs are beginning to mushroom, so to speak, more and more. But that is primarily the driving factor. But the next thing is trying to synchronize a lot of the curriculum so that it reflects the intrinsic development of jazz music.
Ellis, I wanted to ask you this, too. You started on the tenor sax, is that correct?
No, I started on the clarinet.
On the clarinet. Oh, I beg your pardon. But then turned towards the tenor sax as a instrument of concentration for a while, correct?
Yeah, I got a tenor saxophone because the clarinet had been a primary staple in early traditional jazz. And by the time I came along, in the popular music of the day, clarinet was sort of relegated to traditional New Orleans jazz. The recordings of the day of the artists, you know, people like Fats Domino and local artists, whenever they would go into a studio to make a recording, the tenor saxophone became the primary instrument used in those recording sessions. So I got my mom to buy me a tenor so I could play with the rhythm and blues band.
And were you playing piano this whole time, or was there a conscious switch to making piano more of your focus?
Well, in the early days, I would use the piano to learn songs, and I had somewhat of a homemade technique. But in my last year in high school, I was studying with a great piano teacher, classical piano teacher. It would later establish in my own mind the foundation for the way that I'm playing today. I was fortunate to have a piano teacher who could help me to learn how to play the instrument in a correct manner. Mm. It was when I got out of, I went into the university as a clarinet major, and when I graduated, it was my intention to go back and study with this piano teacher. However, she had left town, so I couldn't do that. There were so many good tenor saxophone players in New Orleans until I began to play piano more and more.
This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight. I'm speaking by phone today with Ellis Marsalis. Ellis, you have a tremendous sense of melody and phrasing when I hear you play. I just was listening to a clip online on your Facebook page, actually, of a performance. I think it was fairly recently. And it was a gorgeous ballad. And it's almost like listening to a singer, particularly when you play the ballads, that your phrasing is just so exquisite. Do you feel that your experience on sax and on clarinet helps kind of inform that sense of melody in your playing?
No, not really. It's mostly vocalist. I remember somebody asked Miles Davis once about who did he listen to from a vocal standpoint, and he said Frank Sinatra. You are, because of the importance and the proliferation of words, most of the songs that are referred to as standard were composed by very good musicians for Broadway musicals. And I say Broadway musicals because that was mostly where the musicals were initially performed. Sure. Those of us like me who didn't live in New York, we had to wait until the movie came out.
Mm-hmm.
But when the movie came out, and we could go and hear all of those melodies sung by most of the time by the same people who was on Broadway. But I think basically it was the vocalist.
Well, that makes sense as well. Because what I said was it sounds like I'm listening to a singer the way that you the way you phrase melodies and stuff. It's just...
Well, thanks for the compliment.
Oh yeah,
that's basically my primary influence.
Thank you.
This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight, and I'm speaking today with Ellis Marsalis, who's called us from New Orleans. And this next question, Ellis, comes from one of our Montana Public Radio hosts, John Arvish, who hosts a program called What I Like About Jazz. And he wants to know your opinion. This is like the big question that I'm sure you get all the time. Your take on the state of jazz in America today.
Well, it's difficult to pin it down. You know, people like Duke Ellington didn't even like the term jazz, primarily because things changed so much. For example, anybody who would gravitate at any age towards listening to Louis Armstrong's Hot Five, you know, with the cornet and the clarinet and trombone, tuba and the drum set. Technology was difficult at best to record the drum set in the 20s. So there was that to overcome. But if you listen to that band, the Hot Five or the Hot Seven, and then fast forward to John Coltrane's quartet, I mean, how would one discern that both of those are considered jazz music? And I just left out all kinds of things in the middle.
Yeah.
You know, from,
sure.
Let alone those people that I refer to as jazz singers, who I don't think there is any such thing as that. But that's another story for another time.
Ellis, I wanted to ask you, one of the other things that John Arvish, host of What I Like About Jazz, asks about is just some of the trends that are happening now with the incorporation of styles like hip-hop and more use of electronics, not even so much instruments, but just electronic sounds, live looping, and that kind of thing. What is your take on incorporating those things into jazz music?
Well, I'm not sure how to incorporate some of those things in hip-hop with jazz. I'm not even sure if the objectives are the same. See, because as jazz started to evolve, Duke Ellington was using his band to express the culture that he grew out of or grew up in. So a lot of what he did had overtones of what we call classical music. Not that it sounded like European music, but the form, you see, this is very important, form gave way to the expression of the composer's will.
Yeah.
And when we think of hip hop and rap and other popular activities, most cases I don't really think about music at all, because the objective doesn't appear to me to be the same, which is not a right or wrong thing about hip hop and blues and rap and whatever else. But in most cases, one of the things that I find necessary in dealing with young students and introducing them to the breadth of jazz through instruction is to recognize that the music has a history. Now, most of the popular idioms, they have a history, but it's a rather short, because the creators of it are not necessarily concerned with a history. Most times, they're concerned with a hit record. So, you know, and I'm not going to say that it's impossible for jazz to be incorporated into, or for the popular idiom to be incorporated into jazz. jazz. Because basically that's what blues was the popular music. And singers told different stories of human interaction using the blues form. But I don't think the objective is in the mainstream of the popular idiom to be to pronounce historical value in it one way or the other.
Thank you.
Ellis, we've talked so deeply about music, the art of music, jazz, playing, techniques, nuances. I wanted to ask, when you're not playing or teaching music or traveling, which I know you still do quite a bit of, to performances or to workshops and educational opportunities, what are you doing for fun?
I'm an armchair quarterback.
Oh, you are.
I'm a Saints fan because that's the team in New Orleans.
Sure, yeah.
But for the most part, you know, I enjoy that game. I grew up as a baseball fan, but eventually the media overtook baseball. And now younger people say, well, it's too slow for me. I was just caught up with everybody else with football.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, that's it.
So
and if I'm not looking at football, if I'm looking at television at all, I'm usually looking at MSNBC or sometimes the local PBS channel has some artistic activity.
So if this music thing doesn't work out, you could maybe be an offensive coordinator for Sean Payton and the Saints.
No, it wouldn't work too much for me because I'd be the cheap imitator of Donald Trump. You're fired.
You'd be fired, folks, right and left, huh?
Oh, man. Yep.
EllisMarsalis.com is the name of the website that you can go to find out more about Ellis and his life and his life's work. It's a great little website. It's got like a little timeline that you can click on for different in the bio. I love that. It was a very creative way to do your bio. So EllisMarsalis.com. And thank you so much for making time to speak with us by phone here on Musician Spotlight. And it's a real honor to have you on our program. This is John Floridis. You've been listening to Musicians Spotlight. Our guest today has been Ellis Marsalis. If you'd like to contact us, you can do so through the Montana Public Radio website, mtpr.org, as well as through our own website, musicianspotlight.org. You can also find us online, on Facebook, and on Twitter. Our program is available as a downloadable podcast from those websites, as well as through iTunes. This interview was engineered by Beth Ann Austin. Musicians Spotlight is a production of Montana Public Radio.